This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
Hi, this is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast at Flash Memory Summit 2019. I'm joined by quite a few people around the table today. I've got Scott to my right, I've got Neda to my left, and I've got Ashok sitting next to him. So we've got four of us. In fact, three of you all looking at me as if, you know. So we're all, but actually, let's just explain exactly where we are and who we're talking to. So when I said Scott, I meant Scott Shadley.
Yeah.
Scott, you're from NGD Systems.
Yes.
Quickly, just tell everybody what you do for the company.
Yeah, so I'm VP of Marketing, and my job is to have fun conversations with folks like Chris and to help the market understand what we're doing with things like computational storage. I also have the luxury of co-chairing the SNIA Standards Body Working Group that's actually helping drive direction of computational storage for the entire industry.
Great. We'll come back and explain what we mean by that term in a second, and
yep,
we'll dig down deeper. But guys, who'd like to go first in terms of introducing themselves? CEO should go first, really, shouldn't it?
Sure. This is Nader Salasi, founder CEO of NGD Systems.
And this is Ashok Sardaria. I work in the technology department, and I work with the people outside the customers, try to understand what their application is and how we can bring those applications into the computational storage.
Fantastic. Right. Okay. So let's actually try and get a definition about what we mean by computational storage, Scott. Because you and I chatted last year with Martin. I think we had three of us had a great conversation. But we chatted then probably in generalities around why people would want to do compute at the edge. And actually, that was our discussion at the time. The term computational storage is getting more and more, I guess, exposure. I'm hearing it more and more. Will you just give us a definition of what you mean by that and what it actually means to the industry?
Yeah, and it's interesting. We've spent the last year, if you will, since the last Flash Memory Summit, working with the industry to help kind of define what this term means. So
right,
computational storage at the highest level is a ability to do data processing or data manipulation on the storage bus. So that's what kind of sets it apart from in-memory or GPU or other forms of acceleration.
Okay.
So it's taking the ability to process data on the storage devices. And there's, as you mentioned, quite a few opportunities to look at how to do that. And we have chosen a specific model for our particular take that we feel has some significant traction and capability.
Great. So where are you in terms of that that journey as a company? How far have you got? I mean, just to give everybody a bit of context, we are sitting in a room where we've got lots of equipment and you've done some great demonstrations here, but where are we at?
So since we started the journey about 6 years ago, we have proven the fundamental technology, and now we have at the stage of commercialization.
Okay.
So we have introduced our ASIC-based solution that's quite advanced from the geometry point of view in the industry, and low power and high capacities. We started introducing the production level solution in the hand of the customers and starting the qualification.
Okay, so quite a way on then, but really at the stage of starting to work with customers and really sort of prove the product out.
Yeah, it's kind of gotten it from where it was a nascent and people were talking about it but weren't really using it to a point where this year we really actually have end customers starting to finalize quals, doing deployments of products into the field.
Okay.
And the number of people that are interested in the different markets have actually continued to expand quite healthfully, not only just for NGD Systems, but for the market as a whole, so we can get on that hype cycle direction that really proves out the technology.
Right. Let's just talk about form factors, and then we can go on and talk about specifically what the technology does. So you've shown me, and sadly we're not on video, we're only on audio, but you've shown me some form factors here, and you've shown me some server form factors that actually allow you to put your devices into a range of different chassis and solutions. So can you just walk us through the sort of things that you're actually delivering on?
Absolutely. So when you look at bringing any kind of new product to market, especially if you think storage, you've got to stay within a form factor that people are comfortable with. So we started with the standard everyday 2.5-inch hard drive-like SSD. All of our products are on an NVMe bus today because that is the kind of protocol of the future for flash technology.
Right.
So we want to make sure we're on the right curve,
yeah,
from a protocol perspective. And then as we start to see the market evolve, companies like Facebook and Microsoft and others have shifted to these smaller form factors. And one of those is the M.2 that has migrated from the laptop platform into the data center. And a few folks got together, including one of our partners we had on stage during our keynote, to this EDSFF, which is a mouthful.
Which is a horrendous acronym.
It is.
Enterprise. Jonathan Hinkle.
Yeah, exactly. He was on stage.
Yeah, what a terrible acronym. You know, but yeah, I know it's like a, I guess it's like a, it's half of the ruler size.
Yeah.
That's what people call the ruler.
So if you're familiar with the gum stick of an M.2, yeah. Just think of an oversized gum stick that can have a little bit more power. Realistically, what it was designed to replace an M.2 with a data center friendly form factor.
Because yes, there's power they're not hot pluggable, are they?
Not yet, but no. They are getting there.
Yeah.
And so we are also offering the E1.S, which is the half ruler, and then the E1.L, which is the long ruler. Both of those products will be available in our portfolio as well. And one thing that we put a special effort on when we designed our controller that is the brains of all this, which we'll get to, was to offer, as Nader mentioned, the high capacity option. Because one of the biggest problems we're running into is people can't afford to keep putting a ton of small capacity drives.
Right.
They need a larger capacity drive, and they need to know how to manage that data. And that's really where the computational storage comes in.
Okay. So when I looked at the form factor, Nader, and you took me through the little box, which had a couple of the chips in, actually, which is quite interesting. The first thing I thought was, if you've got an existing storage device, especially something as small as an M2, then if you're adding anything to that, then that's potentially a power overhead and more of a cooling issue. I've seen some devices which need like a double slot, and you're looking at that going, that's a bit, you know, it's a bit ugly. It's not particularly neat. And then you showed me one of your devices, and that's not what yours looks like at all, because you have a different implementation model.
Right. So we have taken the approach of the starting a fresh controller for the SSD to start with that is optimized for the power efficiency and capacity. And then we added additional resources for just compute capability. And if the customer needs to use it, they turn it on. If they don't need to use it, it's off. The impact of it, since it's integrated into a single silicon, it's minute in from the power point of view, as well as for the cost or real estate point of view.
Right. And that was really quite a surprise to me, because the amount of compute power you've got in that controller is obviously quite significant.
It's quite significant. We have added a quad-core application processor, which is 64-bit application processor, ARM-based, with a DSP extension. And we are running Linux operating system and supporting container technology that the customers seamlessly can move their application into the computational storage device.
Right, okay. So if I'm deploying into any of the form factors I can see here, effectively what you're giving me is every single device that plugs into a server has its own set of cores, DRAM, and can do its own processing.
Correct. And the real trick for us was computational storage. There's things like the term processor thrown out, accelerator thrown out. And whenever you think of a processor and accelerator, you think of a one-off or a two-off, not a truly scalable platform.
Right.
You're adding a drive, or you're adding a processor, or a accelerator. So when we looked at it and took this approach that Nader mentioned as far as bringing in the ability to do application processing at the device level, it becomes truly scalable. And so if you look at a standard 2U 24-bay chassis, you do simple math, 24 times 4 is 96 additional processing cores that are capable of managing the data that's stored directly on those particular devices.
Right, so that's worth touching on, because what we're not saying here is that this isn't a plug-in device that sits next to your storage. This is actually integrated directly, so any of that processing reads and writes from the NAND directly.
Correct, and one of the key points about that is it is storage, so it needs to look, act, and react to a host or a user as storage device. So plug and play NVMe to make sure that if, to Nader's point, they don't need it turned on, it still works as a storage device, because we're not augmenting, we're not adding to. We can physically replace and be a SSD solution for a customer, and then have the ability to say, hey, look, we can make it even more effective for you.
Okay, so silly question though. Is that really part of the business model, just to be an SSD supplier? Because there's lots of people doing that already today.
Yes, you know. So it is part of the business, because the adoption of a new technology always takes time. And not all the customers, not all the hyperscalers from day one, they're going to put millions of the computational storage into the field.
Okay.
They might start with whatever number of units they start as a storage, and they can turn on to the computational storage as the need comes up seamlessly again.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a really cheeky question, and that's really around the cost.
Yes.
As a result of that, because deploying something there where you've potentially increased the cost of that device if you never then use it is not something that hyperscalers are going to be that keen on.
Correct. So the as I mentioned to you, this is advanced geometry. So the amount of the silicon area that has been added for the compute is extremely low and almost minute
right.
in the big scale of the complete drive. And we also, for the being an SSD provider in the industry, the cost is a major concern for everybody. So we have a unique business model that we let the large customers, they procure, negotiate and procure their own flash media. They consign for the manufacturing. We manufacture everything and we don't add any margin to the flash. We are not in the middle of the flash. So we provide a complete solution for them, minus the cost of the major component that is the biggest concern for them.
Okay.
Yeah, and to kind of add a little bit to that, the cost of NAND today is in the you know dime range. So even if you round it down to a dime, a terabyte costs you $100. If you do a 2 terabyte drive, it's $200. Well, if that's the case, the cost of a controller that sits in the average ASIC controller range is minute in comparison, no matter how much, even if we were 50% more expensive, our ASIC would still be significantly less, and we were much more efficient than that, of course.
Okay. I think it's important for people to understand that because ultimately, you know, if you look at, say, a hyperscaler deployment, or if you look at even a large cloud environment, the last thing you want to do is think, oh, that chassis is the one that's got the computational storage in, and that one hasn't, and I can only run workload on that one or the other. I'd much rather have the functionality to turn it all on or off or whatever without having to move workload between servers.
So precisely.
Clearly, that's got to be part of the design criteria.
Yeah, and you'll have seen from the especially for Flash Memory Summit, one of the big topics was a lot of these solutions are enabled today by FPGA-type products.
Yes, I've seen a lot of that.
And those are wonderful solutions. I'm not saying they're a bad choice, but when you get to your cost comment, FPGAs are 100-plus, at least, in a cost per controller, where ASICs are, you know, $30, $40 or significantly lower than that. So that's another of the cost-benefit trade-offs of going with the ASIC-based solution, for the, especially when it comes to scale.
Okay, I will say that nobody has actually told me the cost of the FPGA solutions. Yeah. I've asked many times, and I've not been given any detail.
Yeah, so part of it is the cost of FPGA, but more importantly is the physical space it takes and the power consumption that consumes and the heat that generates.
Yes.
So those are fundamentally is the showstopper to deploy it in a larger scale.
Yeah.
So if we look back at the E1.Short, for example, this new EDSFF beast, there's actually been designed what they call an asymmetrical form factor, which puts a 25 millimeter heat sink on one side of a what used to be very user-friendly small form factor.
I've seen that. It looks horrendous.
Yeah,
looks
and part of that is because their controller technology and the way that they manage that product, even as a standard SSD, not even computational, the power draw that they're creating with their inefficient controllers requires that. And now you go from something that went to be designed to take 8 to replace 2 is now 1 that replaces 4. It's like it kind of defeats the purpose of the form factor.
Okay. So let's move on and talk about what we can do with this device then. So imagine we built a server environment. We put in all of our devices. First of all, what can I run on this? And what does it mean by running code on this device?
So that has been really our main focus, is that when we came up with this whole platform, we wanted to make sure that we have a platform that's easy for users to take their application and port those over, right?
Okay.
So some of the things that we've done is that fundamentally we're running the Linux on ArtBox. So it literally looks like a micro server. Just like any other server, you can SSH into our drive and start executing the commands that you want to. So we really make it flexible. We don't require any kind of modification to your kernel or anything like that. You just basically, on your host system, we provide you a small little driver that you put in there, which is done in user space. You put that there, and then that opens up basically a TCP IP tunnel. Through that, we can download the application into our application processor and execute those. We have a support for the Docker container. So that way, if you have a Docker container, just like you would go on an app store for like iOS and you download an application and you run it on your phone, exact same way, you can go to a Docker container, get a container that is made for the A53, and we have done that. That's the demo that you're looking at.
Okay.
You just download that container and you start running the application. So it's really made simple to use.
So it's an ARM core, basically.
It's an ARM core, exactly.
Okay. How much DRAM does it come with?
So we have a couple different product lines, right? So it's going to be either, so we have a 4 gig of memory, or we can do 8 gig. So right. of that, we use 2 gig for our flash management, and 2 gig is available for the in-situ processing.
Okay.
Or if you go with the 8 gig, in that case, you have 6 gig available. Most of the applications that we have been running, we have not had issue with the memory, but it's available.
Okay, and the A53 is how many cores?
4 cores, and they're running at, we can run it at between 1 and 1.4
right.
gig.
Okay, so I've now got effectively a little micro instance running on the device. I can easily push code down to that device, which sounds great. Is that code then acting asynchronously against activity that happens on the storage component of that device, or are there other ways to drive the way it works?
You can completely drive it however you want to. We have also come up with a cluster file system, which basically allows you to copy the data like you would to the drive. So you just write the data, and on the other side, the in-situ processing is looking for the data to come in, and as the data comes in, it can process in line and send the results back.
Right, okay. So the demonstration I think you showed me earlier, you effectively, which is quite funny actually, it was a great demonstration. In fact, there was a couple, but the first one showed you, or actually it was Scott, did the actual handiwork, moving data into a file system that presumably is on the device, and the device detects that data's turned up, and therefore it does something with it.
Right. So basically what we have done in that case, the demonstration that you looked at, is we're mounting a drive, just that like you normally would, your standard SSD drive. You put the data into it. And on the other side, that drive is also mounted internally because we're using a clustered file system.
Right.
Internally, that exact same directory is mounted, and it's looking for data to come there. As soon as it comes in this case, we were doing the image detection, but you can do whatever algorithms that you want to run.
And is that process just a function of the way that you're running the code? You've just decided that in this instance the solution will just watch for the file system changes, and you can do anything you want with it.
Absolutely, you can do inline compression if you wanted to, you can do inline decompression, whatever you would like to do, all of those things are available.
Okay, I mean that's quite a simple example of something that, you know, it's a great demonstration.
Yeah.
And I think people can understand that, they can look at that, but in reality our data is much more complex than that. So we end up with structured data, we end up data in, you know, NoSQL solutions and so on. How do you address some of that? Who wants to pick that as a...
No problem. So when you look at it from that perspective, because we're literally copying an instance of the application from the host into the drive at the simplest level, it has to look at the data sets in the same way that we would look at the data set. And all of the drives will run in parallel. So if you've spread your data across multiple drives and things like that for performance striping, things like that, regardless of the structure, as long as that file's intact on the drive will do the self-seek. And if I've got, say, 24 drives in a server, and the data that I'm really looking for is only on 2, all 24 will run the operation, and only the 2 that have the data present it back.
Okay.
And so it actually, that ability to limit the amount of transfer of data is very valuable. And it can be structured, unstructured. We've looked at a whole bunch of different ways of managing those different data sets. There's opportunity to go all the way to, you know, file object versus LBA, those types of solutions.
Okay.
Because it's Linux talking to Linux.
Okay. Ashok, you're going to say
something. Yeah. So basically, also, we talked about the simple application, as you said, right? But we can, because it's a true 64-bit application processor, we can run the complex application. So one of the demo you saw is obviously we're running a TensorFlow,
right?
So it's a very complex application. But again, because of the ease of us running the Linux and everything, we're able to run that, right? We're running a mobile net demo as well, which is where we're basically taking the live stream from the USB camera, feeding that through the host straight into the drive. You would be writing that stream like you normally would, and then we're processing in line at the same time and doing object detection. So that's based on the mobile VNet. Again, TensorFlow is running on the drive as well.
Okay.
We are also running MongoDB, which is the database, and we're running the entire instance of the database within the drive. Right, so everything that you need to do, it's all within the drive. There's nothing running on the host at all. So
is that running as a containerized version of Mongo?
Actually, no. This is we actually ported it.
Okay.
So it's actual just recompiled and running on the drive.
Okay. And the benefit there being the fact that you can shard Mongo across many different instances of devices,
right?
Across.
So as the user start with the one set of the infrastructure they have, with the database, as they database grows, they don't need to restructure or change the infrastructure. They can continue to expand and scale out.
Okay, right. That all sounds great, okay? So I love the demonstrations you've shown. I love the examples you've shown. There's two bits that I'd love to try and understand how it all comes together.
Gotcha.
First one is, clearly, I could have one device, I could have many devices. So something might have to be my workload dispatcher across those devices at some point. Second of all, it seems to me at the moment, from where I'm understanding it, if I do, that the only interface between the client machine that's hosting these devices and code that's running on the device is a file system or is the storage itself. Almost like they're the sort of the interface point between the two. Is that the only way this can be managed, or are there other ways to implement the applications?
Clarify the question one more time for me. But
let me explain the reason. Yeah. Let me maybe say it a different way, Ashok. But imagine I just bought a shelf that could only just hold SSDs, that had no host component. It had no operating system, no memory. It was a shelf of drives. You could still operate that as just a shelf of drives. So what value does the host have to me in that point, other than perhaps to do some other processing with that data that's sitting on those devices? I'm just trying to understand, because it looks to me in some respects you could say that this is like a collection of very small blade servers. You could look at it and say it's like that. And that, I'm just trying to work out what the host gives me in that instance.
Correct. It's a very good question. So our idea is not necessarily to displace the host. We are augmenting. However, because as we said, it's like a microserver itself, just by itself or collection of these, it can have enough processing power that it can work seamlessly without the host. And in fact, as you go toward the edge of the network, the devices, the edge servers are becoming smaller and smaller with much leaner host CPUs. And that's where this computational storage actually is going to shine more, because it can offload a lot more from the host CPU and do everything seamlessly inside of the storage device, and host not to depend on the host for transfer of any of the data to do the manipulation.
Okay, that's a great use case. The idea of using these devices, I mean, that's our original podcast, Scott, obviously.
Yes.
But using these devices in an edge context where you can add more computational power to that scenario. In that case, let's move into that discussion and think about use cases that you've had customers deploy this with. What examples can we talk about, or can you talk about, that show how this is being used?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the more unique ones that we ran into is we had a customer that had a power problem. So he was buying servers, but he could only put 4 drives per server because he ran out of power because of the power draw of the CPU plus the whole system.
Okay.
And as it scaled, he happened to be European, in a European environment where he was limited in all that infrastructure.
Right.
And he's running Hadoop. And Hadoop needs drives to be effective.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so we had, this is where the two-prong approach of having a high capacity and a compute drive come into play. We give him a high capacity drive for each of those slots at lower power than the spinning drives he had before. So he's getting 16, 32 terabytes of drive per slot.
Right.
Then when we turned the compute on, we were able to accelerate some of his workloads like Terasort, word count, some of these basic Hadoop applications that are a search-focused type thing, roughly about 40% when you hit about 4 drives. So right at his threshold, we're actually now executing 40% faster using the compute on the drives and reducing the core consumption.
Yeah.
So time, power, and capacity were all wins for this particular customer. And it was just, all we did was run Hadoop instance on the drive. He hadn't even customized it yet.
We had one other example that we did a POC with one of the large hyperscalers for looking at a large data set of 1 billion images for doing the classification and searching through the image similarity search. And the performance of the query per second increased by 600%. And usually when the performance increases, the power consumption goes up. In this case, at the same time that we increase the performance, we decrease the power consumption by 300%.
Okay, and that's really quite an interesting use case, because if you were trying to do something where you were scanning any sort of large collection of files, like billions of objects trying to do something, there'd be a huge amount of I.O. going in and out of a server or between a storage system or whatever. But you're eliminating all of that because you've effectively pushed the compute to the as close as possible to the storage. You know, you're not even coming out the NVMe interface to achieve that.
That's so absolutely the basic fundamental, that we are minimizing data movement.
Right.
And as a result, the power consumption.
There's one more thing I want to add to, you know, when we were talking about the way the chip is designed and everything, right? And we talked about how the application, you were talking about the memory. One of the fundamental things that we've done in our initial design is that most of the people require about 1 gigabyte per terabyte when it comes to
standard flash drive.
We have come up with the Elastic FTL, which is where we're saving all that. So what I'm trying to show here is that even though we are adding the compute, because we made our drive itself, it's our own ASIC, so smart that the other things that we're adding, for example, the DDR that we're using for the A53, it's basically free for us because we're saving that DDR from the standard flash management that you would normally use.
Right,
so
okay.
Everything is designed properly to make sure that we're using it in 100% efficient.
Got you. Okay. I think looking at some of the examples you've talked about, really probably what we'll see is it's really as creative as customers can be with this technology going forward. You know, we can probably envisage some ideas ourselves, but I guess we're going to see customers come up with new ideas, Scott.
Exactly. And so one of the things that because of the seamless product, the seamless programming model, and the ability to let the user have that freedom, mm-hmm. it's almost a catch-22 right now because they're like, well, what's the best way to use it? We can say, you can do anything you want. So we've got customers in the AI space, in the machine learning aspect of AI. We talked about how we can actually do model training inside the drive now,
right.
which is a whole thing that Google's been looking at called federated learning for years and hasn't been able to deploy, and we have an actual POC of that. So those are the kinds of things that are very unique, and so it is fun, it is exciting, and we're really looking forward to seeing how computational storage and especially our technology is able to not necessarily grow, but solve problems for the world.
Got you.
And I believe that there's three fundamental benefits of the computational storage from our perspective. One, it's the power envelope, right? Because we are taking that exact same thing running inside the drive. So now the data does not have to go all the way to the host, which takes a lot of power, right? So we're saving a power. Secondary, there's a lot of concern nowadays that the security requirements are coming in where they don't want to transport the data out in a different place.
So now that data
resides in the drive. You're processing all data, so you know exactly where it is. So we help you with the security as well, right? And then the third thing is obviously the processing time. As we talked about the big server, you add, for example, we have a 1U36 drive server. You have 144 cores. That's about three times faster than a lot of the host CPUs that you would have. So it really saves you time and money from all those perspective.
Great. Are there any gaps at the moment that we see in this technology? Is there any issues around security or how you actually push the code out to the devices? Do we need more management around that? Do you think there's still a few things that need to be sorted out yet?
There definitely is. With all new technologies, you find new reasons to figure out what, you know, you don't run into every road bump as you go along. So one of the efforts that we helped spearhead was the concepts of a working group to help standardize a lot of that work.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I have the luxury and joy of corralling 150 plus people at a time to talk through stuff like that.
Nice. Okay. All of this sounds great. So, but if people want to learn more, Scott, where can they go to find out more details? Your website, follow you, stalk you on social media, you know?
Absolutely. So the company website, ngdsystems.com. You can find us at ngdsystems on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. And of course, like you said, if you want to stalk me personally, feel free to do so. I'm at smshadley on Twitter.
So. Okay. Guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's really much now clearer to me the sort of things you're doing. So this has been a great sort of next step in understanding how this technology works. And I look forward to catching up in the future to find out where you've got to.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.